Hello listener, you are very welcome to Project Equality on Near FM. My name is Waheed Mahiuddin and I will be accompanying you today. Our program Project Equality looks into what equality means for people living under direct provision system around the country. A number of Irish people do not know about the direct provision system in the state of Ireland. In a quick roundup for our respected listener, direct provision system was introduced and implemented in the year 2000 to provide a short-term accommodation, food and living services to the refugees and asylum seekers. But later on, the system extended technically to the unlimited period that today, after 18 years, we can see that people are living in the DP centers for years and years long. In this program, we'll be listening to the voices of Malik Amir, an asylum seeker living in direct provision. Also, we'll hear from Peter Masterson, who works with the Longford Volunteer Center, also with Lucky Kambule, will let us know about the work of MASI, the movement of asylum seekers in Ireland, on behalf of those going through the asylum process. And Caroline Reid, the communication officer with the Irish Refugee Council. Finally, Eoin O'Riordan, the Labour Party Senator and former Minister of State with the responsibility for new communities, culture and equality, and Kieran Murray, Coordinator of Near Media, discuss the direct provision and initiatives to facilitate the integration of asylum seekers in Ireland. But first, Ms. Rosina Mehgoub Nafime talks to Mr. Malik, an asylum seeker living in direct provision center.
This is Near FM. My name is Rosine. Today I'm doing a program about life in direct provision. And I have a guest here who is going to tell me about direct provision. Hi, Malik.
Hi, Rosine. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
Good, not bad.
Okay. So, it seems as if you are living in direct provision. So, for how long have you been living in direct provision?
I'm living in direct provision in Longford from last 3 years.
Wow, that's good. Okay. And are you happy living in direct provision center?
Actually, we can't complain about this because we don't have choice. If we say that we have choice, then we can complain. But when we don't have choice, so you can't say we are happy.
Okay, you are not happy. You'll be happy, Malik. Anyway, what are the major problem you are facing in the center?
Actually, in direct provision, there is people from many communities, many countries live there.
Okay.
So, we have many problems there to face sometime. So first of all, you don't have privacy there. There is 2 to 3 people in one room,
okay,
in bunk beds.
Wow.
And you don't have choice in food, and you don't have choice in timing sometime to come into the center and go out. So you have to follow the rules.
Oh yeah, I understand how you feel, but it is well. When there's life, there's hope. Okay, do you want to live in direct provision center until your case is decided?
I think so. It's hard to say yes because I already spent my 3 years in direct provision.
Okay.
So, people know, you know, that IPO taking too long about the cases, so I don't want to spend my more life in direct provision, like more years. So I want to live like a free man. So I want some freedom.
Okay, consider yourself a free man and you are free.
Thank you.
Thank you, Malik.
Thank you so
much. It was nice to meet you.
See you
other time. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yes, that was Ms. Rosina Mehgoub Nafume talking to Malik about the life in direct provision. Next, Malik talked to Mr. Peter Masterson, who works with the Longford Volunteer Center, about his experience with the asylum seekers, the difficulties to commit people to volunteer work, and the range of activities available to the asylum seekers in Longford, and how he views the asylum system in Ireland.
Hello, everyone. You are listening 90.3 Near FM. My name is Malik Amir, And today I'm doing my program about equality. And today my guest is Peter Masterson, who's the community development worker with Longford Community Resources. How are you, Peter?
Very fine, thanks.
We are going to our question, Peter. So tell us about your experience with asylum seekers.
Okay, my experience, I suppose, is about 10 years. I joined ACORN about 10 years ago as community development worker. And part of my work was to work down here in the Direct Provision Centre with the men who resided here, waiting for the system to process their cases. That happened for about 5-6 years, then it closed down for 2 years and reopened about 4 years ago, and is currently running. So the work that I do is somewhat different than it was originally, but generally it is meeting people, getting to know them, their families, their life stories, their country of origin, the customs, behaviours. So there is a learning for both me and for the men in the process.
So Peter, will you tell us that is it easy for you to convince people for volunteer work or sports activities who are living in direct provision?
Yeah, I mean, I work directly with coordinator of the volunteer system under Longford Community Resources. And there was never any great difficulty whatsoever. In fact, we were quite amazed at the enthusiasm of the men to become integrated and to be part of the wider community in Longford. And they would have seen that as an integral part of the progression, that someday in the future, when the system would look kindly on their case and they would become Longford men or Irish men in time, that integration and that that involvement and that experience of working with men and women from the wider community in Longford, that would be a benefit to them.
So what do you think about the Volunteer Centre of Longford, what they are doing for asylum seekers?
Well, as far as I know, there are about maybe 8-10 large sporting cultural events through the course of the year. And there has been an average of 8-15 men from the Direct Provision Centre in Longford who have given up their time and their experience and their knowledge to the causes of others. The weather always hasn't been kind to them. And it's a good barometer of the commitment that the lads down here. It is much easier to sit in a restroom and watch TV than it is to get up and to go out into the cold and the wet and to do this very necessary work, and hopefully enjoyable, and that it will continue.
So how do you see the availability of education and work for asylum seekers?
Well, I mean, it is something that has occupied the mindset of both people in direct provision, asylum seekers, and community development workers for a long time. We were very pleased when there was a European decision that Ireland was in breach early on in 2018. And when that was tested, it was found to be accurate. And so there was a gesture made, positive gesture made by the Irish government, that men and women could avail of education if you fitted into a category that was decided upon as a collaboration between both Europe and the Dublin government. And it's not perfect. It does need fine-tuning. It could probably take more people on board. It could probably make education that has started in many people's own country to continue that. But this is what we're left with at the moment, the education system as it is. The people who are partaking in it are truly enjoying it and are heavily involved. They are very committed to it. On the employment front, there is not great sources of employment in Longford. There are some, and the lads in direct provision here on Richmond Street in Longford have availed of that. When your income is, well, it has increased from 19 euros to 21, 22. I'm not quite sure of the exact number, but if you can avail of an income of €200-300 per week, having done an honest day's work, and that must be quite satisfying and rewarding. And it gives a level of freedom and choice to men and women who you could never expect to live on €21 or €22 per week. Yeah. So both education and employment, while not perfect, has gone a long way to help alleviate that boredom and that frustration waiting for the process to happen for them.
Okay, Peter, thank you so much. Thanks to be our guest today. It was nice to talk with you. Thanks for your time. Thanks for the experience you share with us. Thank you.
And thank you very much. And I wish you both the very best for the future. And hope you can complete your radio and technology education in Dublin.
Thank you. This is Malik Ame. You are listening 90.3 Near FM. Thank you so much.
Yes, that was Mr. Amir Malik talking to Peter Masterson of Longford Volunteer Center. And now, Lucky Kambule is an activist and campaigner for the ending direct provision. He has lived in direct provision for a number of years by himself. As a founding member of the organization MASI, the Movement of Asylum Seekers in Ireland, group formed by asylum seekers themselves to be voice of the voiceless. He seeks to highlight and create awareness about the life in direct provision. Here, he talks to Mr. Abdul Wahab Khan about the work of MASI and reality for people living under direct provision in Ireland.
My name is Abdul and you're listening near FM 90.3. We have Lucky Kambula as guest with us from MASI, Movement of Asylum Seekers in Ireland. How are you, Lucky?
I'm all right, Abdul. How are you?
I'm good. Uh-huh. Okay, as you know, today's show is based on equality, and I would like to ask you a few questions.
All right.
Okay. So I want to know, what is MASI?
MASI is a movement of asylum seekers in Ireland. It's a group that was formed by asylum seekers to be able to address the issues that they face as they wait for the applications and living in direct provision.
Okay.
So it's a group that was formed by asylum seekers themselves to be able to do it, as I said, to find our own voice, to tell our own stories, so to speak.
And how long have you been working with asylum seekers?
4 years now. The group is 4 years old. It started in 2014, in October. So it has been operating since that. It's a grassroots organization that is solely depending on well-wishers to keep us going.
All right.
It's inclusive of everybody, from everyone, from every country. Everyone that's here, as you would know, in direct provision is versatile, inclusive of people coming from Asia, Africa, everywhere in the world. So everyone is welcome in our group. You know, believe in equality. We believe in oneness. Whether you are gay, whether you are straight, whether you are a Christian, whether you are a Muslim, that is not a determination for us. Everyone is acceptable in our group to have her or his views in whatever way.
And what do you think? Are the asylum seekers are getting equal rights from the government or from the society in the island?
Obviously, they can't say the people getting equal rights when their rights are not given to them as they come here. With regard to the government, the policies that separate people from society when they're not being given their the right levels of education,
yeah,
to be able to further their studies, the right level of employment. There's not until recently when this the right to work people have been given. Not everyone still has that. There's still discrimination as far as that is concerned.
The same thing, like the equal right, the giving for a right to work in the society. But if you see in the system, half of the people in asylum centers are getting a right to work, but half of the people are not getting a right to work. So there is no equality. Don't you think that?
Oh, I know that. I know that. I don't have to think. I know that. And it is creating a lot of animosity between the residents themselves. Because you'll have a roommate who is a working class, and you've got a roommate who is not a working class.
Yeah.
Obviously, that creates problems amongst the two people or three people or four people living in one room.
Yeah, in one room, one person is getting like good work, he's earning good money, he's buying good food for him, he's buying good clothes for him, and the one person, he is not eligible to work, not eligible to buy good food, not eligible to buy good clothes. So this, don't you think, is not fair with the other person?
It's not fair. It's not fair, Abdul. That is why we still continue with our campaign for the proper right to work for all. Because we know that is not right. We know that is creating problems to people. We know that it's not equality. And as you would know, anyway, in society, if the working class is gonna undermine our class, the other one, you know,
yeah,
who is not working, you know, it's creating unnecessary hate amongst people.
Obviously,
because if you wake up in the morning, you know you've got to work. You're going to work, but the other person doesn't have to wake up at all.
Yeah.
And the life of the other person that is working improves. Once you work, your life improves. It doesn't matter how much you get paid for your work, but if you don't work, you are like a lost soul, a dead walking.
And what do you think about direct provision? Do you think is the best options for the asylum seekers? And do you think asylum seekers are happy living in direct provision?
Nobody is happy to live in direct provision. If a person says he's happy living in direct provision, that person is lying to you, okay?
Yeah.
Because direct provision is such that people cannot be able to... It promotes dependency.
Okay.
And people are controlled by rules.
Yeah.
Okay, as we speak now, I was just on the phone. There's this center that is open in Wicklow. Do you know that they have put there discrimination that is just happening as we speak? It's a new center. People moved this week. But there are families that have been put in one room. When I say families, sharing one room.
Yeah, it's not fair.
And those families are coming from a certain section of the world.
Yeah.
But the other section that don't come to the others, to the other part of the world, are not sharing. They've got their own apartments, so to speak.
Yeah.
But there is inequality in everything that they do in direct provision and RIA. And they discriminate people according to their color.
All right.
They give benefits to people according to their color. That's what happens. Everyone that is crying in direct provision must come from Africa.
So
because they look down on people who are coming from the African continent and give them minimum standards.
Yeah.
So people don't complain.
So, like, I would say, like, it means that they are isolating people into the direct provision and they're not giving people equal right, going get the house outside in the society and get their own food, cook their own food. They are just isolating into the direct provision.
It is an isolation. The direct provision itself is an isolation because of its proximity where people live. And let alone the isolation that people endure as they live in those particular centers, because the management are so schooled to be able to separate people. They are schooled to make sure that people don't get along. They will give Abdul a favor,
yeah,
and don't give Lucky a favor, okay? That creates a wedge amongst ourselves.
All right.
Okay? They do that deliberately so that you and I cannot agree on a certain point where we want to address the management.
All right.
Because you would be smiling because you, when you go to the manager, you get your benefits, okay?
Yeah.
I would be crying on my side because when I go there, I don't get those benefits.
Yeah.
But now that makes us, Abdul and Lucky, cannot meet halfway to address these issues because you don't need to address those issues because you get the benefits anyway.
Yeah.
I'm the one that is suffering by not getting those benefits. So that's a wedge that is created in these centers as we speak right now. So it's very hard to even address these issues. That is why our group is so important, that when people are hitting a brick wall when it comes to the management, they reach out to our group and we are able to articulate and address those issues. In some of the cases, issues get exposed and then they get resolved.
Lucky, I would like to say thanks a lot for your time because it's a very short time. I would like to thank for your time. and for your like experience with asylum seekers. And I would say whatever you have done, that's a great effort from you. Thank you, Lucky.
Thank you very much.
Yes, that was Mr. Abdul Wahab, my colleague, who was talking with Lucky Khambule of the Masih Movement. Earlier, I was talking to Carolyn Reed, communication officer with the Irish Refugee Council, about the living condition under direct provision and public spending on support of direct provision regime. Welcome to Near FM Project Equality Program. Joining me, Ms. Carolyn Reed from Irish Refugee Council. A number of Irish people do not know about the direct provision system in Ireland. In a quick roundup for our respected listener, the direct provision system was introduced and implemented in the year 2000 to provide a short-term accommodation, food and living services to the refugees and asylum seekers. But later on, the system extended technically to the unlimited period that today, after 18 years, we can see that the people are living in the direct the provision centers for years and years long. In past 18 years, state has paid over 1 billion euros to the companies running the direct provision centers, and in past 7 years, the center owners have been given over 400 million, around 1.2 million a week. My first question to Ms. Reed is, to what extent this huge amount paid to the direct provision centers is justified?
Well, it's not really, and it's not good for, I guess, the Irish taxpayers, and it's not good for the people that have no choice but to live in the direct provision system. And what we're seeing now is, as property prices rise in Ireland, you're seeing how much this system is at the whims of the market. So when contractors see that they can make more profit doing something differently, they're not renewing their contracts and they're ending them. So as you mentioned, it was set up, it was meant to be an emergency measure. The idea was that nobody would spend any longer than 6 months in a centre like this, so they were not built to accommodate people for long periods of time. But here we are, as you said, 18 years later, and people are spending on average 2 to 3 years in completely unsuitable accommodation centres where they're afforded very little autonomy over their daily lives. There's no really respect for privacy or family life. And at the end of the day, a small handful of companies are making an awful lot of money off a system that just it isn't really working for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Right. And is there any alternative system that would have been introduced to government? And if yes, then what was their response?
Well, we believe that there is an opportunity to shift away from the current model of privately operated, I guess the government call it value for money approach to providing accommodation, and a shift towards a model that's centred around human rights and dignity. So at the moment, the current process of procuring accommodation for people in the asylum process, it prioritises the idea of value for money, and it doesn't really make consideration for people's needs. So what we have as a result is the current system of direct provision, which, you know, in essence exacerbates vulnerability, and it really diminishes the prospects for integration and personal development. So what one thing that could be done is the government could make the tendering process for accommodation centres more accessible to not-for-profit organisations like housing bodies and associations, who are not only experts in providing a high standard of housing for people, but they also have a strong focus in creating a community around the housing and providing services and supports that are needed for the particular community being housed. And this could be done in collaboration and partnership with people who have the knowledge and expertise to provide the level of care and support that people may need, because, you know, people are coming from such vastly different experiences in life. They've gone through an awful lot. So there does need to be a holistic approach in how we, you know, receive people in Ireland and how we treat them once they're here. So, but for any of this to be possible, the state needs to readjust their tendering process. And I think now more than ever over the last 18 years, I think we're maybe closer to entering into a discussion about that with the government. So there's a lot of work being done by organisations like ourselves and others who've been working in this area for decades now. And I think, you know, a lot of that has come about because people who've experienced this system and people who are living in this system have started speaking out and talking very frankly and very honestly about the impact and the experiences that they're having. And that's raised the issue. It's raised the public consciousness about the issue. So I think the government are feeling a lot more pressure now than they would have over the last 18 years.
Yeah. And in terms of the like the basic human rights, yeah, as you know, that to have the access to the labor market, to work, and to have the personal secrecy are the basic human rights of a human being. And while living in the direct Peruvian centers, the people do not have their personal secrecy, and most of the people, they do not have the right to work. So how can the Irish government can justify this? Yeah? Because Ireland is considered one of the like one of the leading European countries. So Ireland has signed the Geneva Convention 1951. So how the Irish government can justify the status of the refugees and asylum seekers in terms of the like basic human rights, yeah?
Well, there's a few things. Like you mentioned the right to work there, and that came about because of a Supreme Court ruling. So that has made the government have to take action on the issue around the right to work. And it's okay, not everyone is eligible for it, but I think about maybe a third of adults will be eligible for a work permit. And that's quite significant because it gives people an opportunity to be able to go out, earn a living, provide for themselves, and to not be dependent on this system of provision. The other thing, which like I already mentioned, was moving to a more suitable and appropriate type of accommodation for people, and that would be kind of like front door accommodation that would respect people's privacy and give them the proper appropriate living space that they need. And it would also be more holistic in its approach, so it would be, you know, accommodation where people have access to the supports and services that, that they may need. In addition to that, another big issue with the Irish system is the constant delays in processing of applications. So the government really need to put more resources into how they're handling those, because at the end of the day, nobody should be waiting, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to get an answer on their case. Yeah. So there does need to be that the issue of delays needs to be addressed as well, so that people aren't waiting for years, you know, in a lot of cases with a very limited quality of life due to the restrictions that are placed on them. And I guess until the government start putting resources into that, I can't see how it's going to change, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know that the 18 years have been passed, and what do you think, what is the reason behind the impotency of the Irish government to address this particular issue?
Well, I think they've stood over it for so long now, it's probably difficult to, you know, not defend it. And in Ireland as well, I guess we have a bit of a track record for allowing institutions and situations that shouldn't have happened to carry on for long, and that's resulted in the government having to make formal apologies and compensate people for the harm that was done. So I think they're very hesitant to make changes, because maybe by making the changes, it's also maybe an acknowledgement that the system wasn't fit for purpose. I also think there seems to be a bit of an attitude, or something you'd hear quite often, is that they don't want to make the system attractive for people. But from our point of view, it's not about making the system attractive for people. It's about providing people with, you know, dignity and their basic rights being protected. And like at the end of the day, people are here because they're seeking protection. They're seeking sanctuary. And this idea that, you know, allowing someone to have a dignified life while they're here in the asylum process makes it attractive to people. That's like, it's a bit disingenuous to the realities of why people flee their homelands in the first place.
Right. So would you please tell us what services the Irish Refugee Council is offering to the asylum seekers?
Well, we've our kind of, I guess, frontline service, our main one would be our drop-in centre. So that's an information and advice centre that's open to anyone in the asylum process or with the status. And they would offer information or advice about any issues or like difficulties that people may be having. We also have a law centre that offers early legal advice consultations, and they do take on a small number of cases. It's a small law centre where people might be particularly vulnerable, and it might be clear that they'd have great difficulty to go through this process on their own, because, as you might know, it's quite a complex and difficult and not easy process for a person to go through. Mm-hmm. Then beyond that, we have a focus on youth work. So our youth worker, IFA, would work a lot with young unaccompanied refugees who are here in Ireland. And we also have an education access program. So Charlotte assists people and does a lot of advocacy work trying to get universities and colleges to be more open and welcoming to people in the asylum process and people with refugee status. Yeah. We also do a lot of work on integration. So that's housing and employment primarily. And then in addition to that, we do a lot of policy and research work because, you know, to try and get the changes that we all want to see within this system, you kind of need to approach the government with a strong evidence base and be able to back up your arguments. So that's our kind of key work areas at the moment, but they can change quite quickly.
Yeah. And you also have the Arabic Language Center as well, isn't it?
Yeah, we do an Arabic drop-in service every second Tuesday. So I guess there was a lot of people arriving to Ireland through relocation and resettlement who were coming from Syria, Afghanistan and Palestine. So the need for Arabic translation services increased. And in a lot of cases, people maybe didn't have a great grasp of the English language yet. So it was easier for them to be able to speak to somebody in their native tongue. So we've been running that for probably about maybe 7 months now, every second Tuesday.
Yeah, that's great. Yes, Miss, my last question. While researching for this program, a few people have contacted to us, and I have discussed with them, and they say that they have contacted to Irish Refugee Council regarding their problems and issues, and they say that the Irish Refugee Council could not get back to them. So would you please tell us that what might be the reason? Might be you are busy or...
Well, in the drop-in centre, there's only ever two staff at any given time, and we see a lot of people, I guess, on a week-to-week basis. So it does take us time to respond to every request, especially when they're coming in by phone and email. So what I'd suggest, if people feel that they haven't been gotten back to always send a follow-up email or make a follow-on call. Like, the reality is we are quite a small organisation, we're doing our best, but it's probably difficult to always catch every call and every email. So if you have made contact and you've been waiting for a reply, I'd always suggest sending a follow-up email or phone call.
Yeah, thank you very much, Miss. Thank you.
No problem.
Bye. And to finish our Project Equality program, Abdul Wahab Khan talks to former Minister of Equality and Labour Senator Mr. Ian O'Rayton and Mr. Kieran Murray, coordinator of Nia Media, about the initiatives towards the integration of people living under direct provision system.
Hi, listeners, you're listening FM Near Radio 90.3, and I have two guests with me, and our first guest is from Labour Party. He's ex-Minister of Equality, Aon Riordan, and the second guest is Karen Mary. It's a coordinator with the Near Media. So how are you, Aon?
I'm great. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you, Aon. And Aon, I would like to ask you, like, when you were the Minister of Equality in the last government, so what work you have done on equality for asylum seekers?
Well, there's a number of things that we tried to achieve. The biggest issue, obviously, was the one of direct provision and the situation which we inherited of a system that grew up, I suppose, in the early 2000s as a short-term solution or short-term process, if you like, and then it's housing people in 34 centres around the country. And at the time, in the early 2000s, the idea was that people would be there for about 6 months before they'd be given a decision, either get their papers or face deportation. But what happened, because of the nature of our system and a very poorly designed system, that people were languishing in direct provision centres, and children were growing up in direct provision centres for 9, 10, plus years. So what I did was to go and visit as many as I possibly could, and what I did when I met people in the centres, when the people running the centres weren't in the room, I expected to get a lot of discussion about conditions and food and things like that, and that did come up. But the most important thing, the biggest overarching issue, was the length of time people were there. And in fairness, I think, you know, the conditions could be absolutely fantastic, but it still wouldn't matter if you're there for a long period of time with no prospect or no sense that you're moving on to the next stage of your life. So what we decided to do was to try and find a mechanism, essentially, to get people out. And we established a working group, which had every NGO who cared about this issue around the table. All but one stayed with the process. It was chaired by Judge Brian McMahon. I think he came up with a report, the McMahon Report, which was published in June of 2015, which had a number of recommendations. The recommendation wasn't to abolish direct provision, but was certainly to improve it and introduce effectively an amnesty for anybody in the system over 5 years, that they would have a fast-track approach to their application. So in the vast majority of cases, most people in the system over 5 years were given their papers. And I think since that moment, 2015 until this year, about 1,500 people have moved out of direct provision who are there over 3 years. So it has improved. But I think we possibly have to move on to a situation now to question as to whether the system itself is fit for purpose. But what we really want to have now is a system where somebody seeking asylum gets a quick resolution as to their status, gets a decision within 6 months, and then they can start the process of getting long-term housing, long-term supports, long-term education. Yeah, for themselves and their family.
So, like, on the basis of an education, like, you know, the people are restricted to the level 3 education. They can't go and study further than level 3. So what did you people, like your party and your government, did on the education, and what do you think what can be done further in the future?
Well, I think the key to it is that people aren't in the position of having their asylum application not having been processed. So what we did do was to improve access to third level training and further education for people who were seeking asylum. Now, it's never going to be perfect, because there's always going to be a question mark as to how people are going to be here in the country long term. I think the key to this, and we did bring in the single application procedure, which truncated a lot of the process. What we managed to do was to bring in legislation, which was controversial at the time, but the vision of the protection bill was to ensure that applications would be fast-tracked and given an answer within 6 months. The problem with our system is that if you have people in the system for 5, 6, 7 years, then you're limiting their chances of working, you're limiting their chances of accessing education. You're basically putting a full stop on their lives, or a pause button, I should say, on their lives, and that's not fair. So I think the most important thing is to have a more effective system, so that anybody who's in that sort of no man's land, if you like, would only be there for a number of months, not years, as was the case heretofore.
So I would like to ask Karen, you've been working with different communities, you also worked with asylum seekers, and what was your experience working with them like?
Maybe Abdul, just before I answer that, Aeon, do you have an alarm in the background there?
That's the bell that goes off for voting.
Oh, okay. Voting, yeah.
I can't stop it.
Yeah. So they're calling you in to vote. Yeah. Well, it's.
The house comes to order at 12:01, so the bell is just reminding senators that they'll be wanted.
Yeah. It's nice to get some actuality into the interview. Yeah. I mean, I think the experience at Near FM is that you set out with an ethos that you want to give people a voice, and you want to hear people who you don't normally get to hear speak for themselves and tell their stories as they want to tell them. I mean, sometimes we hear people, but often we hear people as guests, so you only get to hear them when they have certain questions put to them. And there's often already a kind of an agenda or a set way of thinking about it that comes. So for us, it's more about getting people in a position where they can make the decisions and they can get the they can get to ask the questions. So today, I suppose, for Abdul to get a chance to ask questions of Aeon, it's just a different approach. And that's what we try to bring to it. We've done some work in recent times with the City of Sanctuary Group, with Andy Pollock and some of those great people there. And I was surprised that they were actually saying that when it comes to direct provision, that they do have an understanding that it is a difficult position for the Irish government, because if they are to be very generous, it will create a kind of a pull factor, and therefore people will feel that there's a much better deal, a much better opportunity to work and get an education in Ireland, and then that's where they will all come. So the City of Sanctuary, we're talking about that this needs to be looked at on a European level, or even on a OECD kind of wealthier country level, that they need to have something that they can all agree on, where the conditions are fair and generous across all countries, and not just in some countries. So I thought that was an interesting aspect. I don't know, Abdul, if that's something that, or Aeon, if that's something that you've come across, but just to hear the City of Sanctuary express it in that way was a surprise to me.
Sorry, just to address that directly, I mean, I find that in terms of the suggestion there about pull factor, that was the overriding discussion that we had in the Department of Justice all the time when trying to bring in reforms or a more compassionate approach to asylum or to regularization of undocumented workers. The phrase that was always put, thrown at you was this pull factor idea. And that's why I would question having this entire section of the department in the Department of Justice, because the Department of Justice is a law and order, defense and security department. They still have bulletproof windows in the department in 51, Stephen's Green from the Troubles. They're talking about the guards, and they're talking about guard stations, and they're talking about prisons, and they're talking about all that sort of legislation that goes through the House, 40% of which comes from the Department of Justice. And then they don't really, I believe, have the mindset to be compassionate or to be humane, if you like, when it comes to an issue like asylum, because their fundamental knee-jerk instinct is security. So if you're trying to, as I was trying to impress on them the humanity of somebody coming from a position where they may have suffered torture, sexual violence, they may have seen some horrendous things in the country that they came from, that's the reason they're here. I got the sense of, I don't want to say a lack of sympathy, but certainly a sense that pull factor was the most important thing to them. So I would actually advocate now that the entire area of asylum, the entire area of immigration, regulation, undocumented workers should probably be moved to a different department with a different mindset, because I found that to be a very, very difficult thing to overcome.
Okay, and we have very short time now. I would just like to ask, what do you think the recent government is doing for the asylum seekers on the basis of equality? Can you give a quick answer on that base?
Well, I think things have moved on. I mean, David Stanton is the minister that took over from me, and he is now suggesting that the McMahon report has been 98% implemented, percent, though that's a good point. There have been moves to allow access to work, which is a huge issue. I think we're only one of two countries in the European Union that were restricted access to the labour market for asylum seekers. That's been lifted because of a Supreme Court case. That's a positive. I think Ireland has to be a beacon of light across the world, because it's a moral and historic imperative on us to be different, and to be different to other countries in Europe. And the one thing I would say, which is to our benefit and is to the benefit of Irish politics, is that there is no mainstream political party in Ireland that plays the race card or plays the immigration card at election time.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet. You don't, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, yeah, Labour, Sinn Féin, Green, none of us ever play it at election time. And I think we shouldn't be complacent about that, but I think that's very much a good basis for us to move forward and to have a much better type of politics in Ireland. Yep. That they have in the States or in the UK.
Thanks a lot, Aeon Riordan, with us today, and Karen Mary from Near FM. Well, thanks for your time, and hope to see you soon again. Thank you.
How it would be good if the government spent these millions of euros for the development projects, so that the potential refugees who are just wasting their time, life, health, and turning a permanent burden on the state could be the taxpayer and could contribute to the state economy rather than just feeding a few pockets. Finally, in any sense, direct provision can never be defended for long-term living, and the government should take proper steps for the better way out. That was all for the Project Equality program. I wanted to thank all of our guests, Amir Malik from Direct Provision Center, Mr. Peter Masterson of Longford Volunteer Center, Mr. Lucky Kambule of Movement of Asylum Seekers in Ireland, Ms. Caroline Reid of Irish Refugee Council, Mr. Ian O'Raden, Labour Senator and former Minister of Equality, and Mr. Kieran Murray, Coordinator of Near Media. And also thank to my colleagues, Razina Mahgub Nafume, Amir Malik, and Abdul Wahab Khan. This is Wahid Mahyuddin signing off. And remember, if you want to hear the program again, Project Equality will be available in Near FM Listen Again website. Thank you very much.